And you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and for the next hour, you will be listening to Radio Naturopath. We would love it if you would participate in the conversation. You can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can text us at that same number, 860-486-9487. Or you can email us at radionaturopath@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and we would love to answer your questions. Okay, so let's see what's going on. Last week, I promised you that I would talk a little bit more about supplementation and food as it relates to anxiety. So I wanted to do that today. I talked a lot about last week for lifestyle stuff, how you reduce anxiety. And because a lot of people come in, I'm finding, with a chief complaint of anxiety. My observation is a lot of people coming in with a chief complaint of anxiety, most of them have too much on their plates. They're trying to do too much. Trying to do too much is a big theme that I see. And even if people don't come in with a chief complaint of anxiety, that's what they're doing. We have a culture. I don't know if it's this region or this part of the country or the country in general, but we have a culture of how can I use this minute to accomplish something? If you're not accomplishing something, that's a bad thing. And the other thing that I see is that if someone has an emotion that they don't like that's getting in the way of them accomplishing something, they want it to go away. I'm anxious. I don't want to be anxious. Make it go away. Make it stop. Give me a pill so the anxiety can stop so I can keep doing all my things. Of course, doing all my things is part of the reason why the person is anxious, because they're trying to fit too much into a day and they're not spending any time being as opposed to doing. So doing, doing, doing. It's like I have a to-do list. Well, I don't have a to-be list. I have a to-do list. And maybe part of the thing that people need, maybe people need a to-be list. And until you get it right, until you figure out how you can be,
or not maybe, to be.
Maybe you need a to-be list. And there are things you can put on your to-be list that can help. And that's the kinds of things that we talk about as restorative activities. That's your leisure walks in nature, your quiet sitting, your breathing, your meditation, your emotional freedom technique, your snuggling and cuddling, your spending time with pets, spending time with children, exercise. Gentle exercise, stretching, these are all things that could be on your to-be list, things that you do just that help you appreciate being in the world. And this time of year, the leisure walk in nature, or even the leisure being in nature, you can go walk somewhere and just hang out there. You know, this weekend, we were at the farmer's market, and I love going to the farmer's market because you get to see people and you get to talk to people and you get to get your wonderful food. You know, you get to get your organically produced and healthfully produced food. And I rode my bike a lot, and Ron likes to talk. So he was talking and talking and talking, as, you know, it usually goes on. And I had had enough of standing up. So I laid down on the ground. And, you know, people who knew me saw me lying on the ground. I'm like, I'm getting my negative ions, dude. I am just lying there. I'm resting. I can't stand this standing and waiting. I'm going to lie down. I need the rest. And, you know, there comes a point in the day and there comes a point in the week where I'm cooked. I'm just done and I'm not going to be doing anything else. And I think that comes a little earlier for me on Saturday. At some point after the bike ride, I am looking forward to just crashing, just like sitting there and staring and doing not much of anything, you know, sitting on the porch with an iced tea or sitting on the bed with a book or a movie or a program or just not doing much of anything. I think I demand a lot of myself. So if I sit around, it's okay. You know, and I have a term that I call power lying about, which I invite you to try. So where you pretty much lie around and you might look at your device or you might not, or you might nap for a bit, or you might knit, or you might just sit and stare and breathe.
Or just do nothing.
And it's a nice thing. You don't have to do anything. And that doing nothing is really good for you. So one of the things that I see with anxiety is because people are so busy trying to accomplish things, they are not necessarily paying attention to what they're eating. And they may or may not be taking supplements that work for them. So when you do things to power your anxiety or power your stressful lifestyle, that can induce more anxiety. So if you over-caffeinate, caffeine can make you feel like you're anxious. It's not even necessarily that you're anxious. It's that when you take caffeine, caffeine is what we call a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. And the caffeine can come from strong coffee. It can come from medium coffee. It can come from green tea. It can come from guayusa. It can come from any kind of tea. It can come from cola. It can come from one of those, those humorously named drinks that you can get, you know, your Red Bull and your Monster and things like that. It can come from those kinds of things. And so caffeine can come from anywhere. And it is, in fact, a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. And what that means is that a phosphodiesterase inhibitor is something that blocks the breakdown of catecholamines. Phosphodiesterase breaks down catecholamines. Catecholamines are neurotransmitters like epinephrine, norepinephrine, and dopamine, which tend to rev you up. That's their job. They tend to give you get up and go and make you going. Norepinephrine and epinephrine are also known as adrenaline. In the U.S., when scientifically we say norepinephrine and epinephrine, although colloquially we tend to use adrenaline, and in fact in Great Britain, norepinephrine and epinephrine are the same as adrenaline and noradrenaline. They use those scientifically. So anyway, those hormones come from your adrenal glands, and their job is to make you go. And so they raise your heart rate, they raise your breathing rate, they open up your lungs, they open up your lungs and they make it so that you breathe faster, and so they make it so that you feel like you're anxious, and your body is physiologically ready for action. Now, if your very active mind sees that, your higher brain sees that, your cortex sees that, then your cortex is going to find a reason to something to attribute it to, and it's going to think about what can I attribute this to? Oh, I'm going to think about this thing that I'm anxious about, and I'm going to start worrying. So that's what happens. So when you consume caffeine, that can enhance that effect. Even though it makes you more energetic, it makes you feel like you can do more stuff, it makes it so that makes it so that you can feel more anxious, and it can increase your heart rate. And some people wind up getting blood pressure issues with this. For some people, too much caffeine can be a problem. We have a folk festival on the air. Which folk festival is it?
Them on the air?
Yeah, I suppose I can. All right. So we've got folks from the Farman Festival, the Farm Festival Folk Festival in Glastonbury, and here they go. So
here you go.
All right. Hello. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, good morning. Mary Ellen Dombrowski. I'm president of the Connecticut River Valley Chamber of Commerce.
Great. Welcome to Radio Naturopath. What's going on?
Thank you. Well, we're really excited. This Saturday, we're having our second annual Connecticut Farm and Folk Festival in Glastonbury.
That's great.
That's great. Hey, this fits into that laying about thing that you were talking about earlier on the radio program.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, we have the pick of the weekend on Saturday, but in the event the weather changes, we have a rain date of Sunday.
Yeah, I think you're going to be okay. I think you're lucky you aren't having it Sunday. I think that's how that's going to go.
I agree, and we're sticking to that plan.
Okay, so it's the Farm and Folk Festival. Where is it?
It's going to be held at the Elks Club in Glastonbury, which is at 98 Woodland Street.
98 Woodland Street, okay.
And it's in South Glastonbury. It's a wonderful venue. There's parking right on site. And we're going to have a farmer's market with 35 vendors.
Wow.
We're going to have 10 food trucks. And we're going to have a dozen bands on two stages that are going to be playing 45-minute sets.
That's great.
Last year we had, it was our first time, we had over 1,200 adults and there's a small admission fee, and kids under five are free. So we
you just have to keep the admission fees. You can't talk about that on the air, okay?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
But no, I'm not. But I'm just mentioning our count is we had a couple thousand people there for our first event, and it was a wonderful day. It's a big open field. People bring their chairs and their blankets and hang out all day, listen to the music. There's no coolers, and but there's plenty of food and beverage to be purchased there. And this is an alcohol-free event this year.
Oh,
and we ask no dogs too, so it's a very family-friendly event.
That's great. It sounds like a wonderful time. So it's in South Glastonbury.
Yep.
Yeah.
It runs from 10 to 6. Excuse me.
Uh huh.
And the music runs from 10:30 and all the way through, straight through to 5:30.
Uh huh. Wow, it sounds like a great time.
The vibe last year was very sweet. Lots of families. So just a real comfortable place you want to hang out with your family for the day.
Uh huh. Well, that's wonderful. Well, gosh, thank you so much for calling it. So it's a great event. So it's Saturday, June the 4th, and it's from, what did you say, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.?
10 to 6, yeah.
And it's the
Elks Club in South Glastonbury.
Elks Club in South Glastonbury. And can you say the address again?
98 Woodland Street.
98 Woodland Street. And just say the whole name of the event again.
The second annual Connecticut Farm and Folk Festival.
That sounds great. I'm just so excited.
Wait, I hope you can come. It's going to be a great day.
I can see it. Ron's jumping up and down in his seat, so I'm guessing that an appearance may be made.
Well, there's a good possibility. Good. Plus, the Tuesday Saints are going to be there, too.
Oh, the Tuesday Saints are going to be there.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, amongst many other bands, too.
Okay, we're done.
But, you know, Jeff lives right down the street from us, so he's kind of a... and they're buddies.
Can't miss that.
They're buddies, too. Yeah. Nanette and Jeff are great, so...
Good. Well, we hope to see you there, and thank you very much for letting us talk, and we're looking forward to a great event.
You bet. Thank you so much for calling in. It's just a very appropriate thing to have on our show, because there's going to be vendors. There's going to be farmers there selling produce?
Yes.
Awesome.
It's early season. Actually, you know, there's a farmer's market in Glastonbury every Saturday.
Oh, uh-huh.
The person who coordinates that farmers market actually pulled this together, so it's kind of the launch of their market.
Oh, that's great!
The local one in town.
What a nice combination!
So there's not a whole lot of it's really a great team we have.
Yeah,
great partnership. There's not a whole lot of produce because it's so early in the season.
Right.
Yeah. But there's some, and they're you know, the early crops and some of the berries and things, and you can sign up for CSAs. But there's a lot of other items, natural products, and you know, alpaca and jewelry and things.
Great.
Like that. So there's plenty of, there's 35 different vendors in that, so it's going to be very diverse and wonderful.
Great. Well, thank you so much for calling, and thank you so much for promoting and putting on this great event.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
You too.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. So that sounds like a great time. Farm festival. So, we hope to see some of you there, and I think we'll probably find our way over to Glastonbury this weekend. Sounds like a good thing to do. I'm wondering if we could combine some cycling with going to Glastonbury. What do you think?
Well, that's a bit of a ride.
No, we could perhaps talk to the brass about a start point and perhaps have a ride out that way.
Oh, that's a possibility.
Because the roads are still marked from that other ride we did.
Oh, sure.
The May Day.
Oh, that's another idea.
Yeah, right?
Well, we'll have to talk that over.
We'll talk that over.
Let's talk that over and see what people want to do.
So I'm anxious to talk about anxiety. So one of the things we said was you might want to look at your caffeine consumption, and we talked about the scientific reasons why. The other thing you want to do is look at your sugar consumption, and that's why. How could sugar make you anxious? Well, here, let me take you from sugar to anxiety. Okay, there's a number of directions we can get from sugar to anxiety. Number one, sugar to anxiety. When you consume sugar, Sugar is something that your body uses as fuel. You can't live without sugar of some sort. It doesn't mean that you should eat refined sugar that's not paired with a natural form. So if you eat a bit of fruit or if you eat carbohydrate in other foods like in vegetables, that's the ideal way to consume it. But if you eat sugar that's separate from those things, so if you eat a lot of sweets or you add a lot of sugar to your caffeine, that can enhance anxiety. And how can that be? Because when you consume carbohydrates, starches, and sugars, you need B vitamins to help to metabolize them. B vitamins help with the pathways to get them into your cells and help to regulate how your body uses the sugar. So if you wind up consuming a lot of sugar, you're going to you're going to get rid of some of your B vitamins. And so if you're depleted in B vitamins are part of what runs the energy systems of your body. They also maintain healthful function of the nerves in your body, and your nerves will be jumpier if they don't have enough B vitamins around. You also need magnesium to metabolize sugar, and there isn't magnesium in refined sugar. So you wind up in a deficit because the magnesium that you do have around is going to be used to help to metabolize that sugar first and will not be as available to calm your nerves. When you eat foods that have a surplus of magnesium, like your green leafy vegetables, then you're going to tend to be calmer. I invite you to try this. If you want to get a big dose of magnesium and potassium and all kinds of calming minerals and constituents all of a sudden, you can try drinking green juice. So that's juice where you can make it yourself by using those green smoothies where you throw in kale and spirulina. But fresh greens are the best thing. And fresh greens that have been put through either a NutriBullet or some kind of an apparatus that maintains the fiber, that will work. Or even if you juice them and take the fiber out, either way, you're going to get a lot of constituents. And when you drink that stuff, you feel really good right away. It's rather incredible. So I invite you to try that. And just eating leafy greens in general, whether you eat leafy greens in a salad or if you eat leafy greens stir-fried or sautéed or in a soup, all of those are going to help you to get magnesium in a hurry, and it's going to help you to feel calmer. On the other hand, if you eat sugar, like I said, it depletes your magnesium and it depletes your B vitamins. The other thing that consuming sugar does, sugar, the big thing that it does that really will change how your neurotransmitters work is it changes your gut flora. So when your gut flora changes, that changes what you absorb, what you detoxify. And if you have gut flora that's unfriendly, it can actually make neurotoxins. It can make things that actually make you irritable and work against the calm functioning of your nerves. You also tend not to detoxify as well, so any compounds that have gone through your body that need to come out are going to be less likely to come out, and they're going to be more likely to be reabsorbed. You also can overproduce unfriendly microorganisms like unfriendly bacteria, anaerobic bacteria, and yeast. And yeast produces compounds that can be neurotoxic. So and some people who have overgrowth of yeast, they can be very bad shape in terms of the overgrowth of yeast, and they can also just have a little yeast overgrowth, but it can definitely affect your mood. So the change in the microflora, the flora in your digestive system, as well as the chewing through your B vitamins and magnesium, those are things that can make you anxious. Conversely, supplement-wise, when people are anxious, some people benefit from taking magnesium. There are numerous forms of magnesium, and I give people different forms of magnesium depending on what's going on. So the best form of magnesium is eat your leafy greens. Anything that's green, and I'm not talking green M&Ms here, anything that is green, that's a leaf or a plant, has chlorophyll in it. And chlorophyll is essentially the same compound as hemoglobin. They both have what we call in it a heme ring. And a heme ring has a specific chemical compound. It's just that hemoglobin has iron at its center and chlorophyll has magnesium at its center. So anything that has lots of chlorophyll in it is going to be high in magnesium. So anything green is going to help you that way. And they tend to be energizing because your body will take that chlorophyll and use the heme ring and make iron. Make hemoglobin. So it's going to make you feel more energetic. The magnesium as well is more available to keep your nerves functioning in a calmer fashion. The other thing magnesium does for you is it helps to calm all of the muscles in your body, not just your nerves, but your muscles will be less spastic. You tend to be calmer and less tight. And when your muscles feel calmer, you feel calmer. That's part of the nice thing that it does for you. The other thing that happens is it calms all the muscles in your body, not just your skeletal muscles, but also your smooth muscles. So it's going to calm, if you're a woman, it's going to calm the muscles of your uterus. You're going to be less likely to have, if you're still menstruating, you're going to be less likely to have cramping, dysmenorrhea during your periods. And if you, and for anyone, your digestive system is going to work better. If you have adequate magnesium on board, you're going to have a more harmonious digestive system. If you have irritable bowel syndrome, taking magnesium can help you so that you don't have as much spasticity. So whether your problem is constipation or diarrhea, it can help in either direction. If you take too much magnesium, though, you will tend to get loose stool because you tend to just get rid of the excess through your stool. But people who have constipation, one of the things we give them is increasing doses of magnesium until they have regular bowel movements. It tends to work very nicely because, you know, if they're depleted in magnesium, their bowels are just going to be too spastic. And when you get nice peristalsis and nice contractions in the digestive system, you tend to be more regular. It really works very nicely. So the forms of magnesium that we have, if you go to the drugstore, you're going to find magnesium oxide. You'll find that easily because it's cheap. It's dirt. It's what's in dirt. So if you get magnesium from the ground, that's what you're going to get. Magnesium oxide doesn't absorb very well. It goes through you pretty well. It will absorb to an extent, but it doesn't absorb well. If you're just looking for a laxative, magnesium oxide will work nicely, but it's not going to get into your body that well. So we like the chelated magnesium better. Chelated means that it's got a compound attached to it in a claw-like fashion that your body's interested in absorbing. One thing I do not recommend is if you get chelated magnesium, look for magnesium aspartate. If there's magnesium aspartate in the chelated compound, I would stay away from it. Why is this? Because aspartic acid is an excitatory amino acid. It revs you up too much. And so it doesn't make sense for somebody who's taking magnesium to help calm down. Aspartic acid makes no sense. You know aspartame, you know, that mm-hmm. artificial sweetener?
Sure.
It breaks down to phenylalanine and aspartic acid. Aspartame is not a good idea if you're anxious. So if you're consuming diet soda and it has aspartame in it, bad idea. Why? Because it breaks down to aspartic acid, which is an excitatory amino acid, and phenylalanine, which in some ways can be helpful. Phenylalanine is an amino acid that is a precursor. Phenylalanine directly can be helpful for pain. But phenylalanine is also a precursor to more catecholamines, to your dopamine and norepinephrine. So raising the level of that stuff is probably not a good idea. So magnesium aspartate is not a great idea. So what I like to offer people, magnesium citrate, plain magnesium citrate can be helpful. If it's ionized, it's better in a powdered liquid form. If it's just plain citrate, magnesium citrate, your dose that you're going to get your loose stool tends to be lower than some other things. I prefer citrate malate because there's less citrate in it and there's some malate in it. So the malic acid, your muscles need malic acid, and people who have fibromyalgia and muscle pain tend to be depleted in malic acid. So the magnesium, magnesium citrate malate is a great one if your primary thing is musculoskeletal pain. If you're sore a lot, people with fibromyalgia, if you're an athlete, that's the one I tend to offer to those people. People who are anxious, I have two that I like. One is magnesium glycinate, because glycine is an amino acid that is calming to the nerves, and it's easy to absorb. Glycine also is soothing to the digestive system, and it's also a great detoxifier. So there's a lot of benefits to taking magnesium glycinate. The other one tends to be a little more pricey, but well worth it if you need this, and that's magnesium L-threonate. And what we like about magnesium L-threonate, it's very absorbable by the blood-brain barrier. So if anxiety is your thing, that's really that one ranks high. I have seen people take the other forms of magnesium, and it does calm them down and does so if money's an issue for you and you want to get a somewhat cheaper magnesium, you can try using the others, but magnesium L-threonate can be really helpful, particularly for anxiety, because it does get into the blood-brain barrier. We offer that to people who are in the spectrum, you know, people who have ADHD, people who are in the autism, who have an autism spectrum disorder, sensory integration, that sort of thing, because it can just help the nerves to work in a more even fashion. So magnesium, that's another thing that we use. Another thing that we like to use, there's extracts of lavender that you can get. There's now a lavender pill that you can take.
Hmm.
And it's very safe, and it's very nice, and it's lavender.
Does it taste like lavender?
Yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah.
Some people can taste the lavender after.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, not a big deal if you don't mind it. But, yes, and lavender is a nervine. It's calming. Lavender is in the mint family. It is edible. You can eat lavender. You can make lavender jam. You can make lavender tea. And certainly lavender smells good. I have hand sanitizer in my office that has lavender in it. And most people walk in, they go, oh, it smells so good in here. So most people find lavender very fragrant and also calming. So it's a really nice thing to have around. And you can use lavender by eating it, by ingesting it, by taking it in a pill. You can drink the tea, and you can also have lavender sachets and sprays and essential oils around. And just by smelling it, it can help you to feel less anxious. So that's another nervine. There are some simple teas I like to help people with anxiety. And to drink them in tea is a nice thing. Whether this time of year, if you want to drink them cold, that's fine. But drinking them warm is also a great idea. Two of my favorites are linden and lemon balm. So linden, otherwise known as tilia, it's a pretty tree. It's very tasty. It tastes kind of flowery, very mild tasting. Kids can drink it because it's very pleasant. And, you know, most people are going to find it pleasant. It's not bitter at all. It just tastes kind of flowery. You could put a little honey in it, and that would be fine. Lemon balm is great because it tastes like lemon. It's great. It's just it's also in the mint family. Linden is not. It's a tree. But lemon is a mint. Lemon balm is a mint. And it doesn't taste like mint. It tastes like lemon. And so, again, if you like lemon, it's very pleasant, and it's not super sour like an actual lemon, but it's pleasantly lemony. Again, you can add honey to it if you want to, and you can brew. I like, if you're making medicine, I like to brew these things strong. So if you're going to, you're going to let it steep. If you don't have a lot of time, you want to let it steep for at least 10 minutes. Even better to steep it for longer, like an hour or even overnight if you're making medicine, if you want it to be really strong, and then you're going to get all the constituents out. And then you can drink it as a strong tea, and you can drink it cold this time of year, like I said. There are many herbs that are nervines. Those two tend to taste really good. Chamomile tastes pretty good. We like to use catnip for children. And catnip, yes, it makes cats go wacky, but it does not do that in humans. In humans, it's a nervine. It calms you down. Hops, yes, that plant that goes into your beer is actually calming. And hops are used, they help you sleep, and it's another nervine. Hops are bitter, so not everybody likes the taste of hops, but hops is definitely a welcome part of a combination that you're going to make to help somebody sleep and help with anxiety. And there's so many others. There's skullcap and passion flower. They're two well-used herbs. I like passion flower and linden are two that I like to use if people are anxious and also have cardiovascular problems, especially high blood pressure. So passion flower will go into cardiac formulas, as will linden. And so there's many herbs that you can use, as we said. Then there's some compounds, some amino acids that we like to use, like GABA. You've probably heard of GABA. If you know the Ramones, you've heard of GABA, GABA, hey. But that has two Bs. This only has one. So GABA stands for gamma-aminobutyric acid. So plain GABA is what we call an inhibitory amino acid. Remember we talked about we talked about aspartic acid being excitatory. Well, GABA is inhibitory. It is a calming neurotransmitter, and it is in a feedback loop with acetylcholine and dopamine. And so it calms the excitatory effects of dopamine and acetylcholine. So GABA does not cross the blood-brain barrier well. So when you take GABA, what it will tend to do is make, again, like we talked about how magnesium can make your body feel calm, so you feel calmer. GABA kind of works that way. So if you take plain GABA, that's what it will do. If you get pharma GABA has been chemically enhanced so that it gets into your brain, and that's something that we use as well. So pharma GABA is something very nice that I've been experimenting with for my patients with anxiety, and it works very nicely. So those are more supplements that you can take. You may not have heard me talk about calcium. I'm not big on supplementing calcium because if you take too much calcium, you can get calcifications. I don't recommend taking calcium for men unless there's a specific reason, like a man clearly has reduced bone density for some reason. Otherwise, we don't like men to take it because men, they have testosterone and they have proliferative hormones that make them grow tissue, so we don't like to give it to them. And for women, well, again, I tend to only give calcium no more than 600 milligrams a day, and it really depends on the person. I prefer to give, if somebody's really depleted and, you know, try as I might, I can't convince them to eat their veggies. And by the way, if you're one of these people, not eating your veggies is a theme. I see this a lot.
It's a pretty big theme. We seem to be seeing it more than not.
Yeah, that people don't eat their veggies. And if you don't eat your veggies, you're not going to get your calming minerals. I just want to point that out, that the more produce you eat, if you eat fruit is high in potassium, which is lovely and calming. If you eat vegetables, calcium, magnesium, potassium, all of those things are calming.
And maybe this is why people are so anxious.
Yeah, well,
because they don't eat their veggies.
I can take you from magnesium deficiency to war.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've said this before. People don't eat their vegetables. People are, they grow these huge fields of modern wheat, and the modern wheat is high in starch. The modern wheat is depleted in necessary nutrients, is depleted in magnesium. They use a lot of calcium in the soil, so you have a proliferative mineral in excess and a moderating mineral in deficiency. So people are not getting their magnesium. They eat too much starch. They're eating too much of this modern wheat. Modern wheat is high in a starch called amylopectin A, which raises your blood sugar, which will deplete you of magnesium even more. And so if you have people who are overstarching, the other thing is when you have too much starch, it stimulates your insulin. Insulin stimulates growth. It also stimulates inflammation. And when you are growing too much and inflamed and you're low in magnesium, you're going to be irritable and angry. If you're irritable and angry, you're going to be more likely to be combative, and you're going to be more likely to support things like excessive use of guns for violence, and then also war. So I took you from magnesium to war in 3 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever.
That's pretty amazing. And if you take a look, if you do a little investigating, you find out that the consumption of vegetables is very low in the Middle East.
Really?
Hey, there you go. Just if you want to, like, you know, draw a line and connect the dots.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Well, hang on. So in the Middle East, are we talking all of the countries?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia. I'm just kind of poking around here. It's just.
What about Israel?
Well, Israel, it's okay. Here's the thing. The wealthier areas, the people who have more money, have better consumption of vegetables.
Just
that's
like here.
What it's showing here, yes.
Just like the U.S.
Middle East demand for Australian vegetables booms as the wealthy are now buying.
They have to. They're on the Mediterranean. Why do they have to bring produce from Australia?
Because they're in the desert. They're in the desert. They really think about it.
I have to ask you again, what about Israel?
Right. Israel ranks third in consumption of vegetables.
Well, what's one and two?
I'm looking.
I bet Turkey's up there.
I would think so.
I'm going to bet on Turkey because we get a lot of produce from Turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Turkey's a big place, and they have a lot of, because we eat Turkish fruit here. And what about Lebanon?
Right.
Lebanon.
I'm not finding a rapid answer here.
I wonder about Turkey and Lebanon as being one and two. Just because you talk about the cedars of Lebanon, you think of Lebanon as being really fertile. When you come to this country, if a town is called Lebanon, it's probably a farming community, which is in fact true in Connecticut. You know, if you go to pick the Lebanon of whatever state you wish, you can expect to go there and be happy because it's going to be a really lovely rural community. And that's true of Lebanon, Connecticut, Lebanon, New York, Lebanon, New Jersey. There's Lebanon in Vermont as well, right?
Yes. Yep. Lebanon, New Hampshire.
Oh.
It's right over the Vermont line.
Oh, okay.
It's right.
Lebanon is a popular name for a town. It's a biblical name, and it's a, you know, fertile green place. That's how people think of it, the cedars of Lebanon.
Right.
Yeah, so,
most and least vegetables consumed. Number one, Turkey. Number two, Egypt.
Egypt.
Number three, Tunisia.
Oh, this is the what you're calling the Middle East.
Well, it's Africa, Middle East. Yes, is what it. That's that general region.
So number one is Turkey.
Number one is Turkey.
That's great. I
two
called
is
that.
Egypt. Three is Tunisia. Four is Syrian Arab Republic. Five is the Libyan Arab. I can't read that one. And then six is Morocco. Seven is Greece. Eight is Lebanon.
Where's
Nine
Israel?
Is Indonesia. And 10 is Jordan.
Where's Israel? Is Israel not a thing?
Not on there.
Is Israel not considered to be the Middle East?
I don't know.
Why is Israel not on there?
This is the United Nations survey, and that's what it is.
That's so weird. Why isn't Israel in there? Is it because Israel's not recognized by the United Nations? I don't know what the situation is.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
Right, because Israel is an oasis. That's what they did to Israel. You get, they have so much produce in Israel.
I don't understand why it's not on here. It's probably just this report. Who knows?
Because they took Israel and, maybe you should do a separate search on consumption of produce in Israel.
I will try that.
Yeah, right. So anyway, eating the one of the biggest things is to eat more produce. If you eat more produce, if you balance your produce with clean protein and nuts and seeds, and if you can eat them, and not too much dairy. If you eat a lot of dairy, I think a lot of dairy. Dairy is not something at well, first of all, consuming dairy is problematic because we're consuming the dairy of. We're consuming the dairy of another species after the age of weaning. And because we're primarily consuming dairy from cows, cows are much bigger than we are, and the level of dairy that is, or the level of protein, fat, and sugar that's in their milk is much more than what we need. So it tends to, and then the casein and whey, the proteins in dairy, stimulate insulin once again, so it can stimulate inflammation. Dairy, if you are not intolerant to it, it's best limited. It's not something you should be eating large quantities of. Yes, so go for it.
Okay, Israelis are global leaders when it comes to eating their vegetables.
Oh!
Ah.
There you go.
With the average Israeli eating an estimated 197.6 kilograms of veggies every year, Israel ranks third in the world in terms of vegetable consumption, behind Greece, 257 kilograms, and Turkey, at 252.
Turkey is the. I'm going to. When I go see those nice Turkish people over at Starbucks, I'm going to go congratulate them.
So Greece is one, Turkey is two, Israel is three.
Greece is one.
Yeah.
Greece is first. Yay. The next time I see somebody who's Greek, I'm going to congratulate them.
And Greece and Turkey are like that close to one another.
Right.
Very,
of
very,
course.
Very, very, very close.
Well, they must have really great conditions for growing produce. So, that's part of it.
The Israelis also like their sweets.
Yeah.
Yeah. They like their sweets a lot. But they're in third place there behind number one, Luxembourg, and Iceland is number two.
Really? And Luxembourg and Iceland are the
highest
top
sweets.
Two sweets?
Yeah.
What about Scotland?
Because
Scotland's
not
up
on
there.
Here. Not on here.
No kidding.
So... Yeah,
I don't understand that. Why would Jewish people like sugar?
I don't know.
We don't like sugar.
I don't know, but that's just this particular report.
All right.
We're, you know, we
That's
can't.
Interesting. So, yeah. So Israel is way up there in consuming
produce. Yes, they are.
Produce.
Way up there.
But Greece and Turkey are 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Well, it makes sense because, you know, and Turkey imports a lot of produce. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Greece imports as much produce or imports as much produce to the U.S., but we just see a lot of Turkish produce around Turkey.
Right.
Turkey is an enormous place.
Yeah, it is.
It's a lot bigger than Greece. A big country.
Yeah, it is. Big country.
Yeah.
Very big country.
Right. And they like to drink coffee and hang around and talk,
mm-hmm.
which is nice.
Yeah, because we see them locally.
Yeah,
right.
And they're really nice.
Right.
I get them to teach me Turkish, say hello in Turkish. And
so
that stuff.
So you were talking earlier, you were on this green juice thing as another alternative for getting your magnesium,
mm-hmm.
right? I just took a look and thought, well, you know, there's all these people that do this juicer thing and they make juice and all. You know, you don't need a juicer. You can use a blender or you can use a food processor.
Sure.
To do the same thing.
Sure.
Now what you're going to get is you're going to get a little bit more graininess
you
to
get
it.
A fiber.
Because you're going to get pulp.
You're getting a smoothie instead of juice.
Exactly.
Which is fine.
But you could always strain it if you had to, but you probably want the pulp because the pulp's probably good for you.
Yeah.
But if you were to do something like this, what would you recommend for greens to go into your, let's say, food processor?
Right. So one of the things is it has to taste, you have to like the way it tastes. So you're going to have to find a blend that works for you. So you get whatever greens are fresh and ready. So if they're growing the kale, if you go to the farmer's market and they've got the kale, get the kale.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the farmer's market and they had the mustard greens and I made my fabulous massaged mustard green salad.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can do those. You can do callaloo when that's in season. You can do chard. You can do whatever you like. I mean, mustard greens and dandelion greens. You can do ramps if you can get those. You can do...
I have a recipe here.
And there's you can use a recipe. There is a mm-hmm. caveat, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, kale. Now, you know the whole thing about the goitrogens. When you eat cruciferous vegetables, especially kale, broccoli, cauliflower, those things, if you have a tendency to be hypothyroid, or even if you don't, if you have a tendency to be hypothyroid, it's a good idea to cook those vegetables because then you inactivate the goitrogens that are in them or you help to inactivate a lot of them. One of the things we see, if you have somebody who's doing a lot, who's eating a lot of raw kale, so if you eat just raw kale, in a salad, you're probably not going to be able to eat enough to make a difference. But if you're eating a lot of it every day, you might. If you take raw kale and then you put it into a smoothie, you're pulverizing it. So you're going to get a lot more of the constituents. So that's raw kale. So one of the things we do see is people will become a little bit reactively hypothyroid from consuming too much raw kale.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's
and
why
what,
if you're...
what are the symptoms of being reactively hypothyroid?
Well, you're going to be tired and sleepy. You might, depending how severe it becomes. The first thing is you're going to be sleepy. You're going to be tired. Your energy is going to go down. You might notice your exercise performance goes down or you're unusually tired from exercise. And then you could get other hypothyroid symptoms, constipation, dry skin, your hair could fall. Your hair could fall from your eyebrows, reduced sex drive, your reproductive cycle could be affected.
All from too much kale?
If you eat way too much of it. Mm. But the first thing you're going to see is probably going to be more mild. It's going to be fatigue and possibly some hair loss. If you're drinking lots of green smoothies every day with lots of kale in it, I'm not talking about you're having a green smoothie with a little bit of kale twice a week.
Okay.
You're probably going to be okay. And also, if you do different greens, don't do kale every single day and don't do a mm-hmm. ton of kale every single day. And this doesn't mean don't eat kale. This means don't eat a ton of raw kale. That's what
okay.
I'm saying.
Okay.
All right, tell me your recipe.
So there's a recipe here if you want to give it a shot. And you start with 1.5 cups of water. You do 2 cups of kale, 2 green apples cored, 1/2 cup of parsley leaves, 1 medium cucumber quartered, 2 celery stalks roughly chopped, 1 1-inch piece of ginger peeled, and 2 tablespoons of lemon juice. And you throw that into a blender and or food processor, and it makes about 4 servings.
Do I make it?
We can make it.
Let's
we
make
can make it.
Okay.
I will save this and I will
we'll report on it.
We'll report on it. That's what we'll do. That'll be our homework. So
we're
going to
make a green
do.
Smoothie.
We're going to make a green smoothie like I found right here, and we're going to see how it comes out.
I feel wonderful when I drink those. I mean,
I know you love them.
I really love them. And the thing is, I don't make them all the time, or I don't tend to make them. But when I'm given one, or I find one to buy and I drink it, I feel wonderful as it's going down. It's really incredible. And the thing is, I don't do that a lot because I like to eat food. I prefer to have a drink, and then I like to eat a salad. I like the activity of eating and chewing and having food. So I tend not to do green drinks. But in a rush, it's a really nice thing to have. So, that's a really helpful thing. All right. So those are some more things around anxiety.
So you can do this yourself. And now, you know, if you go to the farmer's market right now, there's lots of kale.
Yeah.
There's spinach, which is another good green thing, nice dark leafy green thing. And then there is a student tour going on out in the lobby.
And I waved to them.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And there's also parsley, and there's also
cilantro, dill.
And these are all green things that you can get at the local farmer's market, and real fresh and really nice.
So let me talk about my massaged mustard green salad.
Right. You made one the other night.
Yes.
You made
it. So good. Okay. So this is what we did. So we had beautiful fresh mustard greens because they were in season. And I bought ahead of it. And so here's what you do. You get a nice big bowl because you need a big bowl to work in. And then what you do is you take the mustard greens and you de-stem them. You take out the stems. And if you want to steam the stems and eat them in another way, you can do that. Or you can compost them. It's up to you. But for the purposes of the salad, you want to de-stem them. And so you have to spend some time. This is a time that, so it does take a little bit of time. I mean, it's not a huge amount of time, but you do have to take some time and love your food. So I recommend put on a little bit of nice music, calm yourself down. I find it very peaceful making the salad, and I find it peaceful cooking in general, which might shock you because I don't do it a lot because I'm often home so late.
She doesn't do it a lot.
I don't do it a lot, but when I do it, I enjoy it. I enjoy playing with my food. Anyway, so I get the mustard greens and you tear the leafy bits, the part that you're going to eat, off of the stems and you put them in the bowl. And then when you're done with that, here's the really fun part. Then you take the, after you've torn them from the stems, then you tear them up a little bit in the bowl. You tear them into smaller pieces. And I recommend using your hands. Don't use a knife. Use your hands so you're getting involved with the food. And it's a nice experience to do that. Then once you've torn it into as small pieces as you feel like, then you would go ahead and drizzle it with olive oil to taste. It's going to be a couple of tablespoons or so of a nice good quality olive oil. I would then sprinkle on, not too much, but two tastes, some good quality salt, some salt from Utah or some Himalayan salt. And you sprinkle that on. And then you get your hands in it. And you mush it and you massage it and you rub it and you squeeze it. And what you're going to do is you're going to distress the leaves. So because you're pushing on it with olive oil, that's going to make the the fat soluble vitamins in the vitamins and minerals in the kale. In the mustard greens, more bioavailable. So you're beta carotene and your vitamin K, they're all going to be more, and your vitamin E, they're all going to be more bioavailable because you're putting the olive oil on. So and also because you're distressing the leaves. And so you squeeze and mush until it's pretty mushy. And then once it's pretty mushy, I drizzle on possibly a teaspoon to a tablespoon of molasses. You can use regular molasses or pomegranate molasses, either one. And then I will put in a handful of goji berries. I like dried goji berries. We throw those in. Mm-hmm. And a handful of pecans. If you want to crush the pecans, you can do that. You don't have to. And then the pièce de résistance, I like to put on either chèvre, which is soft goat cheese, or feta. And it could be whatever kind of fed it, whether cow, goat, or sheep, whichever you prefer. But I like to top it with one of those. And so you get sweet, and you get tangy, and you get savory, and you get salty. And it's, you know, Ayurvedically, it's probably very well balanced. It's delicious. It's really good.
It tasted really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know why it tasted really good?
Because you didn't make it.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Tastes even better when you don't have to, when you're the one that doesn't have to make it. It's nice.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
That's good.
It was very good.
So, yeah, I had kind of a long day yesterday. A lot of exciting things, but it was a long day. But I got a lot done. That was okay. So, so that's my massaged kale salad. And by the way, if you're anxious and you eat a lot of greens, you're going to tend to be less anxious. And in fact, I challenge you to have something green like a salad or a green smoothie or a stir fry, and you may actually feel less anxious right after you eat it, or even in the process of eating it, because it can calm you down that fast.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's really, really impressive. So I got to talk about. It's got to talk about a little bit about anxiety, I do want to remind you that exercise is really good for anxiety. So getting regular exercise, and if you're getting the kind of exercise where you're going out as hard as you can every single time, that will probably not help your anxiety. However, if you intersperse longer efforts with shorter, harder efforts and very easy efforts, that helps too. And also, the very easy efforts, the leisure walks in nature, can't say enough about them.
Well, that is a wonderful segue, because guess what's coming up this weekend?
What?
This weekend is Connecticut Trails Day weekend.
Oh.
So Saturday, June 4th and Sunday, June 5th. And there are a number of events that you can go to. If you want to look online, you can go to www.ctwoodlands.org. And you can find on the Connecticut Forest and Park Association, you can find a schedule of a number of hikes that are going on this weekend. 223 events in 133 towns to choose from. So there's an unbelievable list here. If you are here locally and you would like to go to one, there is one at Mansfield Hollow, sponsored by the Friends of Mansfield Hollow State Park. And that would be on Sunday from 12:30 to roughly 3 p.m., depending on how long it takes. It's a five-mile hike.
Nice.
Yes. And I think there is also going to be the short hike, too, like what we do on the first of the year when we do the January 1st hike.
Nice.
So anyway, so I would highly recommend that you show up early. If it leaves at 12:30, try to get there a little afternoon if you could. And you can kind of meet some new friends and kind of check it all out. And then they'll take you for a hike. So there you go. You want to bring water and a snack. You want to wear either sturdy boots or a decent pair of shoes that have some stability to them. Listed here, it says children capable of hiking 5 miles are welcome, provided they are accompanied by a guardian. Rain cancels the hike. And I have a phone number that we could use here, if that's possible.
Yeah.
You can call Debbie at 860-373-8573. And that's before 9 p.m., please. Debbie likes to get to sleep early.
Yeah, okay.
So
that's
anyway.
Great. So there's a lot of good stuff. I know the first weekend in June is...
Oh, it's going to be crazy busy this weekend.
Well,
yeah,
and
lots
every
of
weekend
things
in
going
June,
on.
There's always lots of stuff going on.
And then
on.
There's the Folk Festival in Glastonbury. There's, you know, it's just lots and lots of things going on this weekend.
And then there was one thing. You said something about a statistic. So we're gonna have to wrap it up because we're almost done with Radio Naturopath. But you had said something about a statistic about obesity in the elderly.
Right.
Over 65. What did you wind up finding out? It was about 35 to 40% of people who are
65
plus.
So what I have here is obesity rates for baby boomers, 45 to 64 year olds. Now, this is, you know, it varies in different parts of the country. Colorado is like the place you want to be if you want to be healthy, because they just have, their numbers are just so low. But by age group, 45 to 64 year olds, baby boomers, 35 to 40%
are obese.
Yes.
And is
absolutely.
That more than other age groups?
Yep. Sure is.
Really?
Sure is.
Okay.
Obesity rates for seniors 65 plus.
Yes.
Are in the, this is like a very general thing, but somewhere between 25% and 30%.
Well, they have, right. I don't know if it's a generational thing or if it's that they're retired and they're not as stressed.
Well, it's probably generational too, because they haven't been exposed to food for their whole life. Okay.
Yeah.
Which becomes, now here it is. Young adults, 18 to 25 year olds.
Yes.
Lots of places, 15%. Some places, 15 to 20%.
So the millennials are smaller than we are.
And very little in the 20 to 25%, but states like Oklahoma, Alabama, West Virginia, Indiana.
It's associated with poverty.
Right.
Yeah.
What
about 25 to 40 or whatever, you know,
they don't have that. They don't have that particular, statistic doesn't occur here.
And what is your source?
This source is the state of obesity .org.
Oh, okay.
And
so we're going to have to find out I'm curious about the.
And this is a project for of the Trust for America's Health and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
So I'm curious about the 25 to 40 something.
Yeah.
So we're going to go. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath here on 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch. I've been here with Ron Meniza. And thank you so much for listening to Radio Naturopath. And we'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath.